Hello, and welcome to the Midwest Genealogy Center's Tell Me a Story program, an initiative to record America's family history in sound. Oral histories are one of the most personal and rewarding ways to preserve family stories. The Tell Me a Story sessions are 45-minute interviews between two people with the assistance of a trained facilitator. Participants will receive a compact disc with the full interview. A copy will be archived at the Midwest Genealogy Center and, with permission, later made available to the public. And now, another story.
Good afternoon. This is Willard Welch, and this is July 25th, 2012, and I'm interviewing David Caldwell this afternoon. David, how are you doing?
I'm doing fine. Ready to go.
Great. Tell me your full name, please.
David Franklin Caldwell.
Do you have a nickname at the farm, Dave?
Big Boy.
Big Boy, okay.
That's what Mr. Berkmar called me.
Oh, okay. And where did you come from?
I came from the streets of Blue Springs. The man that owned a lot of the land Lake Jacomo was on, named Hal Liggett, brought me to the farm and convinced my mother that if she put me out there, at least she would be able to find me.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Good. Now, were you the only one that came? Or
Yes, just me.
Okay. And how long were you at the farm? What years?
1953 to 1959.
Okay. Yeah. And 59 is the year you graduated?
I graduated from East High School and Drum Farm in 1959.
Okay. And how old were you then?
18. I was 18 years old.
Okay. And this year you are how old?
71.
71. Okay. And which high school did you attend?
Attended East High School and Bristol Grade School. At the farm, and graduated from East High School also.
So. Right, right. Mm-hmm. Now, did you participate in any of the school activities at East?
Yes. In 1957, they started letting us play intramural sports up there, interscholastic league sports. So I played football for East High School for
good.
3 years.
Yeah.
Yep.
Good. And do you remember any of it? And so you also played sports for the farm, though?
Yeah, oh, yeah. We played our little basketball team played in the church leagues around. Mr. Brown was our coach, and we had like 2 years of championship with our fine team. And it was Mr. Brown used to say, your job is to go in there and see that tall guy? Take him out. But anyway, we had some pretty rough boys as far as being able. They played Marine basketball. Mm-hmm. You know, just grab them and go, boys.
Physical,
very physical. But we got a championship, and he bought a brand new 19. That was a 56 Ford convertible, and we won in February. And he put the top down and hauled the team around in their uniforms. And we went through a little restaurant down by Polly's Pop, and they had these little mouse burgers. You could buy 10 of them for a dollar or something like that. So he treated us all to hamburgers.
That was special, though.
Yes, I can tell you. Of course, we had the team, Jack Ballas, Gene Cope, Don Rank, me, Archie Darrington, and Don Petey played a couple of times with us, but anyway, that was our basic team.
Right.
And, of course, we had names for our players also, you know.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. We had Fat Ass, Flat Ass, and Shoot Happy. That was and that was given by Mr. Brown. He said every time you throw the ball to Jack Ballas, he's going to shoot. He don't want to hold the ball.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, it brings back memories.
Mm-hmm.
And now, do you remember any of the fads that we during your school years?
The fads, the first one I remember, they came out with these nylon see-through shirts. We didn't have them at the farm, but I asked my brother-in-law. I said, if you get a chance, I'd like to have one of those. And he got me, he got me a pink one. I had this pink see-through shirt. And that lasted about the third time Mr. Nelson had seen it and wanted to know if that was something that I'd received for Christmas. And I said, yes, but it wasn't from the farm. He said, I don't think you ought to have it if the other boys don't have one. And it didn't last long after that. It was, but it was pretty sexy for a while, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Mm.
What 4-H and FFA memories do you have?
Well, I can remember the ribbons that I got that I weren't too proud of. I took real mannish projects in 4-H. I had grooming, flower arranging. I built a birdhouse that I'm not sure any bird would want to live in, but anyway, I did get a blue ribbon on my birdhouse, but grooming, they found fault with my fingernails and something about the way I'd had my hair greased up and standing straight up, because we all had flat tops,
right?
Except for the new boys that came to the camp. You know, when they come to the farm, they had duck tails and they were bad until they met a couple of our boys, and then they weren't so bad anymore. But, yeah, that's, I remember that. And then, of course, Elvis had just, I can still remember he was going to be on Ed Sullivan, and I can still remember that we couldn't watch because we had to be in bed. Mm-hmm. 8:30, take your showers, and we had to be in bed by 9 o'clock. Flash Osborne's rules. That was our house mother. And she turned the TV off, and we all went, and we snuck back down, turned the volume way down, and we turned it on so we could watch Elvis Presley. And then they didn't show him except from the waist up.
Right.
What a deal. That's the other fads. DuckTales were a fad. The kids at school had them where they'd comb their hair straight back and then make it look like a duck's tail in the back. And let's see, what else was a fad? Poodle skirts, of course, and bobby socks. And,
right.
Oxford shoes, the black and white shoes.
Right.
They were all fabulous, you know. Mm-hmm. You weren't anybody unless you had that stuff. And, of course, all we had when we come to school was our plaid shirts, our blue jeans, our shoes that we had just cleaned the stuff off of. We had Guernsey hair stuck in our hair where we just milked a cow and was too lazy to comb our hair before we went to school. But yeah. you could tell a drum farm boy.
Yeah. If you couldn't tell it, you could smell him.
That's it. That's exactly right.
Yeah. Now, what other memories do you have with some projects from the...
FFA. In FFA, I had... I took 200 chickens, I took a sow and litter, baby beef. My first project was potatoes. I took we could have a row of potatoes in our garden.
Right.
And we planted them, raised them or whatever, cultivated them, dug them, and we got to sell them. You know, we sold our potatoes.
Right.
And selling potatoes, one row of potatoes at that time, you might make $8 or $9 on a row of potatoes. Of course, potatoes weren't that expensive, but the people would come out and buy your potatoes would give you extra money because you were raising them yourself and you was trying to make money.
Right.
I did have sow and litter project was the best project I had as far as making money.
Right.
And I registered. I had a Poland China sow named Big Pepper. And I registered that sow and her litter at Galesburg, Illinois, with the Poland China Association.
Wow.
And when the pigs were born, my sow only had 5 pigs. And I had one runt that was a male. So we castrated the male. Me and Mr. Berkmeyer castrated that male and made it a barrel. So I had a fat barrel.
Right.
So I had three gilts and a you know, a boar.
Right.
And I sold all my pigs to a high school English teacher at East High School named Mr. Burks. He gave me $60 a piece for them. Market was paying about $32. So
oh, wow.
I made a ton of money on my pigs.
Yeah.
Yes. And I didn't, when we get to funny stories, I can tell you some stories about some of these projects that went awry.
Okay.
But we did have... we did have several projects in the shop where we were building things. You know, you had to make, we thought we was going to make a horseshoe, but after we got through beating on this piece of metal for about 3 hours and about blowing the forge up down there, Mr. Burtmeyer come down and shut our horseshoe down. He said, first of all, it crippled the horse. It wasn't a very good-looking shoe. And so that's when I started thinking maybe the cheapest and easiest thing to do with a hay hook. So I ended up building a hay hook.
Right.
And I had help on it. I had two other guys, Freddie Scott and Gene Cope, come in. They were practicing welding. Mm-hmm. And the first time they welded it, of course, I picked it up and the handle fell off. And I said, well, they didn't get good penetration. But, yeah, there was, let's see, my chickens. I had, you get chickens, and there'd be other kids that have chickens too. And all these projects are in the same so-called brooder house. Mm-hmm. So if you come in and you count your chickens, and then the next day you come in and there's 10 dead ones in your pen, and nope, the other guy's got all, and you think something might be going on. So you have to go on the defensive. I said, next time I raise chickens, they're going to get Leghorns, and I'm going to get Rhode Island Reds. So there'll be no problem.
Right.
Got to change colors of them chickens.
Mm-hmm.
And that's basically the projects I had. Of course, we had our chores, and we had to take care of all kinds of other animals too,
right?
And the sheep and
the hogs,
yep,
yeah.
And the bulls and the horse and the dairy cows,
right?
Yeah,
and then all the beef cows in the barn.
We had a lot of beef cows. Yes, we did. Yeah, that's our food supply.
Oh yeah.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Now, with all of our chores, we got an allowance. How much was your allowance?
When I went to the farm, our allowance was 30 cents a month. And when I graduated, it was $3 mm-hmm. in 1959. That was a lot of money. But being an entrepreneur, I could turn that 30 cents into some real money if I could find the right stuff to sell. And that happened several occasions. As a matter of fact, one occasion I did get in trouble for was I had got the bright idea that since they opened the Mugs Up Root Beer stand up on 23rd Street, and we take off and go up there at night and pool our money, and we'd buy one of those snow cone looking megaphone deals that full of root beer, and then we'd come back and we'd sell it for 10 cents a glass. And these were like 3 or 4 ounce glasses. They weren't much, little Dixie cups. And I had made about $2.50. And then Mr. Burkmar comes and says, okay, who all wants to go to the picture show? And just about everybody except Jimmy Gregg and a couple of the other kids. You don't want to go to the show? We don't got no money. What'd you do with your money? You haven't been anywhere to spend it. We gave it to Dave Caldwell for some root beer. Well, that ended. I didn't get to go to the show either. They had to give all the money back. Yeah, no more entrepreneurship.
Oh, Lord. Now, we all had chores, and which one was your favorite?
My favorite chore, I'd say in the summertime, my favorite chore was probably milking. Mm-hmm. It was a specific chore. When you got done and you got the milk strained and the cans cleaned up and put up, you were done.
Right.
But in some of these other chores, you went on and on. The worst one, I kind of liked housekeeping in the wintertime. Because it was warm in there, you know?
Oh, sure.
Yeah. We'd listen to some records. And the thing I didn't like was kitchen duty.
Right.
I remember first kitchen duty we had, the first cook I remember working with was Miss Lancaster, and she had some epilepsy or something, but every once in a while she'd have one of them fits and throw a knife or something at us. And then we had Miss Franklin, and then last of all we had Miss Lozell, who was there for several years. But cooking was never, I mean, we couldn't even cook without getting in trouble, because we sausages one day, and Gene Cope found that he could put SOS pads in there, and they looked like sausages. Some of them hogs out there eating it, if you dumped it on the plate, they'd grab them. Well, we got in trouble for that, too. I mean, I cut down a lot of trees at Drum Farm and dug a lot of stumps.
Your reward for pulling a trick.
That's my reward for all my careful planning.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Now, besides chores, sometimes there was construction projects out there.
Mm-hmm.
Were you involved in any of those?
Yes. We rebuilt the fence row from the corner at the railroad tracks up at 35th Street, clear to our north property line.
Right.
We rebuilt that whole fence, and we got to learn how to dig post holes and how to stretch
manually.
Yeah. And then, of course, they did have a tractor with a auger on it, but no, we wanted to. We had to learn how it really is done, finer. Mm-hmm. And how to stretch it. We stretched it, you know, with clamping the fence together between two 2x4s and pulling it with a come along.
Right.
And then nail it. We put the fence up. I was there when they started in the gymnasium.
Oh, okay.
Yes. The bricklayers would come in, and we were hod carriers.
Oh, yeah.
Hod carriers and brick. Bring it to us. And so that was – and the other only other constructions when I was, I think about a sophomore, Mr. Brown, our coach and somewhat of a, he was a school teacher or something from down at it was South Missouri. And anyway, he had decided he was going to raise pigeons.
I remember that now.
And I built his pigeon coops out behind the slaughterhouse.
Oh.
We had 2x2s and chicken wire.
Mm-hmm.
And I built them, and oh, yeah, he had rollers and tumblers and, you know, homers or whatever they were. Anyway, he had all these different pigeons, and that was one of the things. Anyway, he'd get a hold of me. I said, yeah, we'll go build something. It was pretty neat. Back then, that was fun.
Right.
Then it became work when I found out what it really was. You know, I don't remember building. Of course, the barns and everything were already there.
Right.
And we did a lot of things like repairing the cellar doors and, you know, and painting the barns and painting the silo and maintenance work. We did a lot of maintenance work. Yes, we did. And that, of course, it was all learning.
Sure.
We learned every time we did something, we learned something.
Yeah.
We learned we didn't want to do it next time. Get me out of this.
Or you learned that you want to do what the other guy was doing.
Right. Well, and you know, in the wintertime, too, working at – I always hated Christmas vacation.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody at school, oh, boy, Christmas vacation, we're going to blah, blah, blah. I said, what are you guys going to do? We're going to clean 200 chickens, 4 hogs, and 2 baby beef so we have something to eat for the next 3 months.
Right.
And that's what we did during the Christmas pause. We butchered.
Yeah.
And it got cold out there sometimes. And sometimes them chickens didn't make it by me too clean. I just give them a pitch, you know.
Yeah.
But, yeah, we did a lot of – I learned a lot about how to cut up meat. And then, of course, we also was out there all during the summer canning and –
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I can still remember the thing I hated worst was lima beans.
Oh.
Lima beans. As soon as you could hull or shell a gallon of lima beans, you were off for the rest of the day. We had one guy, Gene Myers, could shell a gallon of lima beans in about 45 minutes. It took me 6 hours, and I still didn't have a gallon. His fingers were extremely fast. He was very ambidextrous.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't like doing that either.
No.
But
no.
We had to do everything we didn't like to do.
Oh, yeah.
Nope.
Yeah. Everything was a learning experience.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I learned quick.
Yeah, I came away with the knowledge that it might be nice to have a farm, but I didn't want to be a farmer.
No. I know it's easier to mow than it is to hoe.
That's true.
That's what you find out about farming.
Now, you know, everybody has entertainment. What kind of entertainment did you have while you were out there?
Basically, we went to the movies like once a week, and there's 3 movie shows. The Granada Theater up on the Square of Independence. We had the Inglewood in the Inglewood District, and
sure.
We had the Maywood.
Right.
And they all, basically, if it wasn't John Wayne or some classic that, you know.
Oh, yeah.
There's one movie, and there's another guy that'll remember what happened. We went to see this movie at the Granada Theater, and it was supposed to be an all-night movie or something. It was a long one. Well, down to Inglewood was a movie starring Jane Mansfield called The Girl Can't Help It. So me and Jerry Kaufman decided we was going to take off from that Granada Theater, run down to Inglewood, get our girlfriends, and go see The Girl Can't Help It. And we did. Mm-hmm. Well, when we got back, the movie was closed. So we didn't do too good. Yep.
But anyway. We're too successful.
No, and they had a teen town at Van Horn, and our girls would friends could come over there and dance with us at teen town.
Right.
All the time I was at Drum Farm, I never drove an automobile on a date. Never went. There was a few boys that got to go drive a car on a date, but I was not one of those that was trusted enough to go on a date. But it's other than that, I can think of the entertainment. Basically, we entertained ourselves a lot.
Yeah,
playing basketball and
a lot of sports.
Yep, yep.
Yeah. And taking care of your projects.
Sure. Yep. Oh yeah, I enjoyed the animals. The animals were really. I mean, I got to where I could lead my calf would go wherever I wanted him to go, and my pig would follow me around, and oink 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 oink. It was right behind me, you know.
Right.
It's just I like animals, so
right.
And I started out going to Missouri University. I was going to be a veterinarian. Oh. Until I found out how hard it was and how much it cost.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So that's basically the entertainment was we had a visitor Sunday. The first Sunday of every month was visitor Sunday. And if you had family, they right. could come out and see you
right.
After you got back from church till 4 o'clock until you had to go do your chores.
Right.
They could come and visit you. And I had visitors occasionally. I always felt sorry for the guys that never had a visitor, but I knew some of them. And as a matter of fact, one of my best friends even went home with me to so-called home to on Christmas.
Right.
That, you know, when we could go home for a couple of days.
Right.
Well, you get off Saturday morning until Sunday morning or whatever it was. But anyway, Gene went with me to right. Concordia to my mother's place down there.
Right.
But That was about it as far as entertainment.
Right. Well, and maybe some of the 4-H activities.
Well, yeah, we had some hay rides that were quite interesting. And I remember one time we had a hay ride and they brought the Hilltop Girls out there. And, wow, were they smart. They had one that was going to be a movie star, and she was gorgeous. Her name was Beverly Hosey. I don't know what happened to her. But I understand she went to California to be a movie star, but she was gorgeous. Mm. And, of course, Ray's sister was out there.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Billy. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. But anytime we had a hayride, the first thing I'd do is go out and knock on Mr. Taggart's door because he had a daughter named Virginia. And I said,
right.
Can I take her on the hayride? He says, there's 6 guys asked to take her on the hayride. He said, you guys have to fight over her.
Yeah.
But anyway, that was... We were very limited on our access to women.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And particularly since we didn't have a car to go pick them up.
Exactly. And the 4-H Club, the Independence Pioneers, they used to have we had to dance a couple of times over in the Little Boys Building in the living room. And they had two women and two girls, Sharon Conyers and Treasure Goking were the two girls we had.
Uh-huh.
And, matter of fact, Treasure Goking's father passed away. He was a preacher. He passed away about 6 months ago, and she's back in town from Chicago trying to sell his stuff.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Dean Logan ran into her the other day and said he'd sent a picture of himself through Jack Ballas because he wanted to date her, and Jack threw the picture away and asked her out. So and that's the way that story went. But, I can't think of... You know, we did dance, but our dancing was
left a lot.
Pretty primitive. Mm-hmm. I mean, these girls could come back with their arms tore off, and yeah, the boys were all them boys out there. After you were there a while, you became pretty. You were pretty, you know, strong. Basically,
right.
You had to be to do the chores the way
sure.
they had to be done.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And while you're out there and you did all the chores and things. What kind of job skills did you develop?
Well, I learned definitely some woodworking. Learned some sheet metal because we had to build a sheet metal toolbox.
Right.
Was one of the projects. The electricity, Mm-hmm. We learned electricity. We had a demonstration we did on the on how an electric motor works. You know, you take the nail and a coil of wire, and yeah, you can make it spin. Anyway, I ended up being an electrician, and it started there. Because of all the things I did, that was the easiest.
Right.
Mr. Bergmar always says, if you want to find out how to get that job done, the easiest thing is go get Dave Caldwell. He said he'll come up with some way to make it easy.
Good.
Anyway, we had a lot of every skill you could practically need, plumbing, mm-hmm. anything that broke, we had to fix it. And
right.
Butchering, and there's probably not too many people that's had the variety of skills that were cast upon us from the standpoint of learning something. I mean, we had some skills.
Right. Yeah, we were probably the last generation that did all those things on a self-sufficient farm.
Exactly. And instead of just specializing in one thing, we had to know a little bit about everything.
Right.
And maybe not a whole lot about anything, you know,
true.
Basically.
Yeah. No, that's true.
Yeah. Yeah. Hay baling doesn't take a genius, but it sure takes some muscle.
Now, after graduation, did you go to college or trade school?
Yes, both. I went to Missouri University. I got a $250 land grant scholarship and a $125 scholarship from Sears and Roebuck for the School of Agriculture. And I went down there to take animal husbandry, which is a pre-veterinarian type course
right.
structure. Found out after the first year you don't go to Missouri University with $300 in your pocket and try to stay there for 6 months.
Right.
It just does. It's hard to do. I lived in a co-op house, 111 Stewart Road. Columbia, the Tri-Squares Co-op, and my roommate was from the Belgian Congo.
Oh.
The guys across the hall were from Hawaii. It was an international house.
Right.
But it was. I learned a lot there, too.
Oh, I bet.
But anyway, it was like $100 a month for room and board and you know, and right. you had to do some of the cooking and stuff. I ended up working at the egg farm down there, candling eggs.
Right.
And, of course, they asked, does anybody know how to candle eggs? I said, an idiot can candle an egg. I even built an egg candler when I was in 4-H Club. And so, yeah, I worked down. And then after the first semester, I had failed English, which is normal. I got A's in my agricultural classes, and I got A's in wrestling and football. I got A's in those, but the English was – I went south in English.
Right.
So I transferred to Warrensburg, and I went four semesters at Warrensburg, or four terms.
Four terms.
Term school.
Right.
And I aced English there.
Oh, good.
Yes. Oh, it was like going back to high school.
Right.
Going from NU to Warrensburg is like, oh, it was so much easier. And anyway, I never finished my degree program there. I got a little tired of going to school with no money.
Right.
So I went in the Navy. And I come out of the Navy, I went to work, and I ended up going back to school. I went to Park College and took physics, chemistry, and mm-hmm. mathematics. And let's see, what else did we end up taking? Our teacher was a Dr. Higginbotham. He was an astrophysicist.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and he took us and let us look through the telescopes and stuff.
Right.
They got a nice little scope over there.
So. Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. And anyway, I learned a lot from them people, and went to Fisher Valve School and learned how to rebuild valves and a little bit about sizing valves for product flow, about learning about the structures that what causes a valve to cavitate and things that most people wouldn't know anything about. But anyway, I learned that, and then after I learned all this, I went back to work at Bayer, and they said, "Well, we need somebody that knows everything about electricity, plumbing, the whole nine yards, as a planner scheduler." And I took that job, and I had it for 30 years.
Oh, great!
And I worked 6 years as a maintenance man.
Mm-hmm.
Started out as a janitor.
Worked your way up.
I went from janitor on the night shift, washing out chemical tanks.
Mm-hmm.
to the tool crib, and from the tool crib, they said anyone that can pass 5 tests on anything relating to maintenance, whether it be pipe fitting identifications, anything, can be an A operator, which was a maintenance man. And I volunteered to take the test, and I passed all 5 of them. So
great.
They had to make me a maintenance man, and they said, wait a minute. So I ended up being a planner scheduler, which was really great because it paid 3 times what the maintenance man paid.
Oh, good benefit.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I did real well. Bayer did me real well.
Yeah. Right, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, you had a good opportunity, and you grabbed it.
Well, see, I started out, I worked at the Vendel Company right out of the drum farm.
Right.
That was my first job. And I had my brother-in-law came and got me out of the farm. He came out to get me.
Okay.
He's the only one that had a car, my whole family. My family, no one even had a driver's license ever.
Oh, wow.
I'm the only one that ever drove. I've got 2 sisters that's never drove a car. My mother never drove. My dad went to the 4th grade. My mother went to the 6th grade.
Mm.
Okay, so basically I went to work at Vendel and on the evening shift, and I had no place to stay, and my brother-in-law couldn't come and get me. So I said, well, I'll be fine. You know, I said, I'll find somewhere to sleep.
Right.
Well, there was a guy working at Vendel named Big John, and he said that he had a junk car out there that wouldn't run. He's trying to get it started, but it won't run. So it's going to be there for a few weeks. So I slept in this old Plymouth for about 3 weeks until I found a place up on Chelsea Avenue that had a Model A garage. They'd rent me for $15 a week. I said, what a deal. So I moved in, me and the collie dog. Mm-hmm. That's where their dog lived too, Dino.
Oh.
So I got all the benefits, fleas and the works, you know. But anyway, that was Vendo, and then I worked for Sears twice. I worked for Bendix. I worked for Towen Wilkerson Construction Company when he's building the bridges for I-70.
Oh, yeah.
And let's see, U.S. Navy. And then Comagro, Bayer, and Mobay were all the same company. I started there in 19. Oh, I worked at Alice Chalmers and Underground Storage. I forgot about that one, too.
Right.
But I started at Bayer in February of 1968, and I retired in March of 2003. 36 years, never missed a day, never was late.
That's great. Great record. Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
Partly due to that work ethic you picked out at the farm.
Exactly. The easiest way to teach somebody responsibility is to give them an animal or a group of animals and see how many of them die. You know, basically, I mean, you know, and I know that they'd say, hey, you better get down there, man. Your hog's dying. You got to put some water in that hole. He can't, you know, they can only sweat through their nose.
Right.
And Fred Scott lost his pig down there.
Oh, yeah.
There's your whole project gone, you know. I said, oh.
And your money.
And your money. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's a quick teacher.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's see. So we went to – now, you said – so did you finish college then finally? Or did
3
you,
years.
3 years?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But you had some other job training there that was terrific.
Well, yeah, I had – I went to Columbia School of Broadcasting, and I got a license as a disc jockey.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I got my third class radio telephone license, and I went to work for this little station in Liberty, Missouri, KBIL, the little big giant of country music, 1180 on your dial. Anyway, I went up there and I was pulling the news, which is off the API. You pull the news and you get rid of anything like soccer scores in Bolivia and stuff like that. But,
right.
You know, so that the real disc jockey can read it on the air, you know, when he does the news. I did that for about a month, and it paid $425 a month plus whatever airtime you could sell. If you could sell a commercial,
oh.
And there was only a couple of places in Liberty to use. There's George Bedinger's Liberty House, and Big Al's used car a lot up there. But anyway, Jimmy Dallas was famous, the country singer for. So they let him do all the commercials. He made all the money, and then I said, well, I got an offer for a job in Ottawa, Kansas, for $475, a $50 raise, right. If I would move. I said, move? I just, you know, I can't move. I just bought a house.
Right.
So I decided I better get into something else. So I went to work for Alice Chandler's, building combines.
Wow.
Yep. Worked for them for 5 years. Supervised their shipping and receiving before I got into an altercation or a disagreement with one of the big bosses and told him that he could take his job, and he said, okay, I will. Right. So I went down the road.
Yeah, it's funny how they respond to those things.
Yes.
Yeah.
No sense of humor.
Yeah, none at all. Now, do you think Drum could have better prepared you for life after graduation?
Yeah, I noticed that right off the bat when I got out. I had no idea what utility bills were. I didn't have a credit card, so if you didn't have any money, you didn't eat, you know.
True.
And when I left there, I had $675 from project money, minus $175 that Mr. Berkmeyer had loaned me to bury my grandma.
Oh, yeah.
And so I'm coming out of there with about $490, I think, or something like that. Well, to buy clothes for school and all this, and I worked at the Vendo Company, and I was getting. I was making big money. I was working every overtime I could get,
mm-hmm.
and I was making over $100 a week. You know,
that big money those
that
days.
That was big money, and even after taxes, I had almost $100.
Right,
and I was putting all that money away for college. And of course, when I went to the Missouri bookstore down there, I found out what books cost.
Mm-hmm.
So much for working all those hours.
Oh, I know.
But yeah, if you don't have any transportation, that's a big problem. And if you've got a job, if you're staying one place and you're working somewhere else, and there's no way to get between them except your legs,
mm-hmm.
you better get someplace close. And that's basically it. Didn't I had a rough time getting started, and
right.
But I never, they never thought anything about that. When we walked out of there, we were not prepared for what we was going to get hit with as far as how the economy and everything really works. You know,
right.
I mean, it was pretty sad.
Yeah.
But I am not sure that I'm not sure that they thought anything about it. You know, it's just everybody leaves there and they don't hear any complaints.
Right.
Well, we didn't want to come back right away,
True.
We just got out. Spring me, baby.
Yeah. And I think that's one of the reasons why a lot of the guys went into service right after they graduated.
Exactly. If you couldn't find a job and you had no place to go, the service was a home and three meals a day.
Right.
Yes.
And they trained you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I got training in the service, too. I went through machinist mate school,
mm-hmm.
and became a machinist mate in the Navy. And basically, machinist mate is a valve mechanic, and steam pipe mechanic. You know,
right.
Steam valves. I don't think there's anything that I learned that I didn't use at one time or another, with
right.
the exception of algebra.
Oh yeah, right.
I don't remember using algebra that much.
Yeah. Now, you said you were in the Navy.
Yes.
How long were you in the Navy?
Just a little under 3 years. I fell down a ladder on a ship, hurt my knee. They operated on it in Portsmouth Naval Hospital, and I was in the convalescent units for about 6 or 8 weeks. They sent me back to duty, and I was the last one to reach general quarters, and they sent me back to Naval Operations Base, and they said, this guy's knee's really messed up. You know, he's not going to be ready for duty anytime soon.
Right.
No shore billet available. Everything was a sea billet.
You
either had to be at sea or out of there.
Yeah.
So they gave me a 20% disability and sent me home with an honorable discharge. I said, that's fine.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, the main thing was you got honorable discharge.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, because I know when you get out of the service and you let them know you were in the service, that's
mm-hmm.
the first thing they ask.
Yeah. Let's take a look at your DD-214.
That's right.
That's what they call for. And it'll tell right there what everything, where you was. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, of all the things that you've learned at Drum, what would you consider the most valuable?
Basically, probably not the thing that a lot of people think of, but I learned how to get along with others, number one.
Right.
And I also learned responsibility. And I learned that if you don't do it right the first time, Mr. Burkmeyer's going to make you do it over.
Mm-hmm.
And it's easier to do it right the first time than it is to do it twice.
Right.
So I think I learned job ethics as far as I'm going to be there on time. I'm going to be there every day.
Right.
And I was. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how I got so lucky. Matter of fact, the manager of the Bayer Corporation, when I got ready to retire, handed me a check for $2,000. And the deal was that I had not missed a day in over 30 years.
Right.
You know, I think it was 35 years at that time. I went another year. Anyway, he said, so what's the reason why you have this such great attendance and health? I said, you show me a man with an ugly wife, and I'll show you a guy with perfect attendance. So he didn't ask me any more questions. There was a lot of people in front of me. But anyhow, I just enjoyed going to work. I enjoyed going to work more than I did going home. But, Drum Farm taught me a lot of things, and I don't know where I'd have been if I hadn't gone to Drum Farm.
Mm-hmm.
I was not interested in school.
Right.
I'd start the school, and if I'd see a rabbit, I'd throw my lunch bucket down and chase a rabbit for half a day, you know?
Right.
Never know what you're going to come upon. And it was just that kind of a responsibility wasn't the top level. I would My mother almost had a heart attack when I was at third grade. Third or fourth grade, this man come to Blue Springs Grade School, and he's going to teach music. And he said, man, you'd be a good trombone player. He said, you've got the big chest, and you can, a lot of air. It takes a lot of air to blow a trombone. I said, really? He said, here, you take this instrument home, and we rent it now. For the whole year, we rent it for $4. You know, I said, well, that's still a lot of money, $4, you know, in the 40s.
Right.
You take this instrument home and show it to your mom and tell her you want to learn how to play it, and the lessons are free. They're furnished by the school. I took the instrument, went out the door. They were playing kickball on the playground. I set it down on the curb of the sidewalk, and Glenn Banger, who became a state representative of the state of Missouri, in a Model A Ford, ran over that thing. So needless to say, when I took it back, I said, man, this thing wasn't in very good shape. Oh, my, he wasn't happy. So I never did learn to play an instrument, needless to say. That was the end of my music career.
Let's see. Now, how did drum influence, or do you believe drum influenced your success?
Well, it had to, because without the training and the if you don't have to worry about where your food's coming from, and you got something to wear, you got half of a beat right there.
Right.
I didn't know when I left Bruce Spring that I was so poor. I didn't know I was that poor.
Mm-hmm.
Until I got to Drum Farm, and they all had shirts, pants, shoes, coats, and a TV. I said, wow.
And three meals.
This place, as a matter of fact, Mr. Burkmeyer had a deal one time. He told me that I gained more weight than the pigs. He said, if I put you on the corn hog ratio, you would have really come out nice, you know.
What a compliment,
you know. And went from, when I went out there, I weighed like 63, and I went to 123 pounds in about 4 months.
Yeah.
Yeah, three meals a day rather than a bottle of Coke with peanuts in it.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
But, yeah, for nothing else, it helped my health. I was healthy. I was never sick at Drum Farm.
Right.
And we drank raw milk for 30, 40 years before they told us that you got to have pasteurized and shut us down. But that milk, there's no other taste like raw milk.
No.
And cream.
Yeah.
And remember turning the old cream separator?
Oh, yeah.
My job. I want to get 6,000 RPM out of this puppy. <You know? laughs>
And you could.
Oh, yeah. Boy, it's a thing.
Yeah.
I think the farm, basically, they taught you that, you know, you're just a person. You're nothing special. You're just a person. So,
right.
Are we out of time?
No.
Okay.
Now, what which accomplishment makes you the most proud?
Of accomplishments wise, besides working for 36 years at one place without missing a day, I won the state of Missouri singles class championship in trap shooting in 1990. Mm-hmm. And me and Willard Welch won the state of Missouri public speaking contest and soil and water demonstration.
Yeah, we did.
Yes, sir. In 1958. Mm-hmm. And let's see, what else have I done that is an accomplishment? I finished radio disc jockey school. I think that's basically my accomplishments. I've been a productive citizen thanks to the help of the drum farm and getting me away from some riffraff that I used to run with.
Right.
I definitely would have been in trouble down in Blue Springs.
Gave you a good start.
Yes.
So what words of advice would you like to share to the younger generation?
The thing I would say above all else, there's only one thing that somebody can't take away from you, and that's what you know. So mm-hmm. learn all you can learn and retain it. That's some people can learn something and 3 days later they can't do it.
Right. You know?
And I've always, this was a gift given to me. If I do something, I can do it again. You know,
right.
And I don't have to do it right away. I can do it next week. My memory was, I had a pretty good memory.
A big asset for you.
Yes. Yeah. You know, used to tell me that I had a photographic memory. I said, no, it's not photographic. It's pornographic. I never forget a joke.
Yeah. No. Do you want to share any funny or humorous stories about the farm?
Sure. I got a couple of those. One was back in when we had the projects.
Right.
When I had my Poland China sow and litter project. A Poland China is a fat hog, and it's not basically what they were looking for at the time was bacon hogs. And Landrace had an extra rib, which made a longer slab of bacon. So they were the ones everybody went for. So I went ahead and got my Poland China sow, and Charlie Frakes got a Landrace sow. Now, Landrace pigs are white. Poland China are black. When the pigs came along, Charlie's sow had 11 pigs, and my sow had 5. 3 of Charlie's pigs kicked the bucket right away. He let the sow lay on him. We both built farrowing crates. Mm-hmm. For our sows, he didn't build his quite good enough because the sow could still lay on some of the pigs. But anyway, him and myself were two that had the sow and litter projects at the same time. And there was a corn crib up at the upper barn right inside the door on the left. Mm-hmm. And every day we was to go up there and get whatever we wanted to feed our pigs and sow and mark it down on a piece of paper and take it and feed it. And whenever we sold our projects, we would pay for the corn. We pay for the feed. So come time to we sold our pigs, and Charlie had turned in that he used 68 bushel of corn for for his sow, and he had 8 pigs finally left.
Right.
His sow and 8 pigs, and his 8 pigs weighed about 190, and I had 5 pigs going about 240. Mm-hmm. Anyway, Mr. Burkmeyer said, Charlie, did you count them right? He said he only had 5 pigs, and he used 3 times what you did in corn. He said, well, yeah, his pigs eat more than mine. My pigs didn't eat that much. So he said, this ain't the way it's going to work, Charlie. You didn't count. So we're going out there. He said, you're going to do some math. I want you to measure that corn crib. I want you to find the area volume, and then I want you to find out how much corn you can put in a square or a cubic yard, and then we're going to figure out how much corn was in there and how much is left, and you're going to pay. He had 5, you had 9. You're going to pay for 9/5 of whatever went out of there, you know. He came out and lost money hand over fist, man. I mean, he was about 180 bushel of corn off.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that was funny. And then this one night we was going up to the Mugs Up root beer stand about 10:30, which we're not supposed to do, but I was living upstairs in the East Building at the time.
Right.
And I said, come on, Charlie. Charlie wanted to go. Okay. Well, I said, it's not a good idea to take a rookie, but Charlie was big, and he was the strongest guy I ever seen at the farm. He could actually pick up an H farm all by grabbing the cultivators and move it, the rear end of a tractor.
Right.
And because I seen him do that when he seen Mr. Burtmar coming, he had hooked into the fence. He said, I got to get this out of here. But anyway, I came out the second floor window in the front of the building on the south side, off the porch, grabbed the hole, come down the stood on the railing. We used to have a railing around there. Dropped to the ground, and I was ready. Charlie came out, grabbed the gutter, and the whole gutter came off. And Charlie's laying in the yard going, it knocked the air out of him. And Mr. Brown's up there said, where are you boys going? He said, well, we're going down to feed our calves. He said, well, okay, for the next 30 days at 10:30, you're going to go feed your calves. And he said, I'm going with you. So it didn't work too good. So we got caught on that deal, but that was one of the – that and Charlie's corn crib job, he was a real piece of work.
Charlie wasn't the brightest.
No. Miss Osborne, our house parent, she was in the big boys' building. We called her Flash because she always carried a flashlight.
Right.
I had a snake. It was a black snake that I'd found down the barn, and I made a pet out of it. Anyway, we were watching TV, and if you took that snake and laid it across the knobs of an old Hoffman TV and rubbed it on the belly, it would just lay there, mm-hmm. So she come down, she says, 8:30, boys. Get your showers and get in bed and turn that TV off. Nobody moved. She said, I'll turn the TV off. Boy, she stepped over, and that snake moved, and that old hand-crank telephone was, that's Mr. Burtmeyer's ring, too.
Right.
He's got a cobra. Get over here. She had me for that, and I had 5,000 earthworms in my closet. Because this guy come from Osceola, Missouri, and told me, and it was me and Carlton Cockrell and Dean Culbertson. He said, "If you guys, I'll give you a penny apiece for all the worms you could dig." So we thought, man, how much is $50? So we dug worms night and day down there, threw a cow pile over, mm-hmm. dig the worms out, and I had them in 5-gallon buckets. And he didn't come back for 3 months, and they didn't make it. They rotted in there. Oh. And she come in, she says, what's that horrible smell? I don't know. You need to wash your shoes. Wash your feet. Get out of there. And oh, it was all kinds of stink raised. And it, she came in about, I don't know, I was probably a freshman when she came in. I had found a gray fox up in the alfalfa field, and I thought it was a puppy. Mm-hmm. It was a young one. And I brought it down and put it in my locker. And it wouldn't shut up at night. It was howling and barking, and so she had Burtmar over there to look at that thing.
Yeah.
He said, "No." He said, "That'll eat all our chickens. You're gonna have to kill that thing. I'll take care of it." Turned it loose.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, that was too. I gave that poor woman a fit.
Oh, yeah. One more question, Dave.
Yes,
sir.
What's
the one thing you'd like most people to remember about you?
I think probably that if once I have somebody as a friend, I don't ever intend to lose them. If I have a friend, I will do whatever I can for that person. I do not I don't break friendships easily. I'm fairly honest when it comes to actual doing business. Now I'll give you a run for your money if you want to. If you want to play grab rear or whatever you want to play,
mm-hmm.
I can do that real well too. But I think basically is I have a horde of friends, and these are friends that if I ask them to do something, they would do it.
Right.
And a friend in need is a friend indeed. That's an old saying.
Right.
I've got some that really are friends indeed, and I'm most proud of the friends I have.
Oh, sure. Yeah, that's a real treasure.
That's what I got.
Yeah. Well, that's great. Well, that concludes another interview with the Drum Alumni, and we appreciate your listening. Thank you. Bye.